Simon Mundy, and this podcast is the second of two exploring the cycle of Schubert symphonies recorded live at the Stereati Festival in Graz, southern Austria, with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, conducted by Niklaus Harnoncourt in 1988. The opening of the Second Symphony. In 1988, the orchestra was no stranger to the Schubert symphonies. They'd only recently recorded them with Claudio Abbado. But their relationship with Harnoncourt was only a couple of years old, too. It was to last the rest of his life, and had a profound effect on the musicianship and careers of many in the orchestra. For these programmes, I've been talking to three of the players who performed on the recordings. The violinist Elizabeth Wexler, her husband, double bassist Enno Senft, and the flautist Thierry Fischer, and one who did not play on them, violinist Christian Eisenberger, but he was the audio consultant on the discs, and he's been in COE himself all this century. Enno and Elizabeth explained how Harnoncourt came to the orchestra, and how he immediately jolted them all into new ways of thinking.
It actually came through partly through Thierry Fischer, our ex-principal flute, who had worked with him in Zurich Opera, and there were some of us who played in Concertos Musicus also, and he and them they somehow persuaded him to give it a go, basically. And he was very keen because we were somehow a raw orchestra that had not much experience.
We hadn't played a lot of the major repertoire.
Yeah, and we're really hungry for ideas. And I remember this first rehearsal we had in the Concerthaus in Vienna, somewhere in a basement studio. It was a terrible place, and everything sounded absolutely terrible. But he had such charisma, and I think we worked on Beethoven 8. It was really incredible energy and everything he said was a complete eye-opener, in my view. But then the concert we did, it was so extreme in the concert. I think the public just simply couldn't take it. Now we understand much more about it, and I guess the public does as well. But then I remember in the concert, I think there were people that left. They couldn't take it. It was too...
Boundary-breaking.
Boundary-breaking. That's right. Yeah.
When we started with Harnoncourt, I felt so confused by some of the way his ideas that we, on stage, when in the rehearsals, we almost felt we could get lost in a Beethoven symphony, that it was so disruptive to how we'd thought about it, which was really good fun. And he was thrilled if we ever actually did get confused and came in the wrong place or something, because he'd shifted the main beat. But by the time we got to the Schuberts, I think we already understood his language a lot more, which doesn't mean it was less exciting. It was extremely exciting. I can remember one particular, I think it was Schubert 5, putting Schubert 5 together, sitting in that rehearsal room, and it was like electricity. It was like he was telling some very exciting story, and we started with the basses and how they do the for the umpa, and then we added the reaction to that, and then we put the engine in of the middle parts, and then the first violins, as it was in this case, put the melody on top. And it was so exciting to feel that, how he understood the score and get there, the prize of the melody. And we were so, everybody listened so intently, even, you know, like one trumpet note in, well, this would be a Haydn symphony. I remember him describing the politics of the time when Haydn wrote it and what that note meant and how the audience would have felt it and how terrified they would have been. It was just thrilling.
Of course, Schubert is not Beethoven. So I thought that the whole Schubert project was a much, much more fragile, delicate, intimate experience. Yes, we had all the extreme dynamics, but also an incredible intimacy, particularly in the soft and the slow movements.
Part of the Andante of the Fifth Symphony. Harnoncourt had this instant, and in a good way, shock effect on many performers. When it comes to these Schubert symphonies, Christian Eisenberger feels that we should listen to the way Harnoncourt unfolds them through the course of the performances.
What I would recommend somebody else to listen to in comparison to other recordings is a kind of language. It's a kind of a story that's been told. It's if you just listen to, if one instrument starts with a phrase, the other instrument or the other section is taking over and just being creating a big thing, a big line, and a conversation between instruments. And so this is something which is, I think, very much different to most of the Schubert recordings I know. Also, it's the clarity of how you can follow different voices and different instruments, but still is unison orchestra sound. It's something I really, really think is very, very exceptional in these recordings. And they're recorded very well by the Austrian radio, I have to say, as it's sound-wise, it's very well done.
Thank you.
the minuet and trio, the third movement of the Fourth Symphony. Harnoncourt and the COE finding a subtle balance between the dance and dramatic elements. These performances in Graz were not without their challenges, and not just because of Harnoncourt's demands. That July was exceptionally hot in Austria, and the rehearsals were held in conditions that owed nothing to modern air conditioning. Nonetheless, the players found the experience exhilarating. Here's Elisabeth Wexler and Enno Senft.
Something I experienced as, again, part of the violin section, that his ideas were so strong, it was quite, you could almost use the word controlling. He very much wanted it his way. And I think as a wind soloist, that was difficult for them. Their own ideas had to be somehow restricted. And the curious thing in a violin section was the more strong his ideas were imposed on us, the more freedom we got as a section, which was fantastic. It was simply that we knew how we were doing it, and within that we then were liberated to be as creative as we could.
But it was very, very hard and very exhausting working with him, because he was obsessed about the stuff, and particularly dynamics. It could never be as soft as he wanted it. And if you play for 2 weeks with just one hair of your bow, you eventually lose your sound. So you really need to work on this so that you don't end up not producing any sound, because everything has to be so extremely soft and then extremely loud as well. It was at times extremely frustrating, because it always was really at the limit of what we could do or tolerate. And
also, he had boundless energy, and the demands were so extreme, and we were hot and exhausted, and he went on and on and on, somehow immune to it all, didn't he? It was very impressive.
Yeah, he just said, oh, it was very hot. Yeah, well, what can you do? You just have to love the heat and then keep going, which was particularly the case in the Schubert project, because we were up in on the second floor of a very old building, the Mahlerhof in Graz, and it was 35 degrees. It was absolutely unbearable. But what could you do? We went through all the symphonies up there in that place. And actually, the hall itself was also extremely hot, because they always had to turn off the air conditioning. It was too noisy. So where we did these recordings, I think that they were all done under at least 30 degrees in the hall, if not plus.
I have to say, having just said he was rather tyrannical, he was also hilarious and very entertaining. So the rehearsals were just full of laughter all the time. That was another nice quality. He entertained us fully for those three-hour rehearsals. So that's why his energy was so impressive.
The bassist always played on open gut strings, and he was very grateful for that. He inspired us to do it and convinced us. And he absolutely loved. He loved that kind of immediacy and sometimes the roughness of the sound. Whereas everyone else played on modern instruments. There was a lot of rasping in the sound, but that's what he wanted, and we loved it. Yeah, we loved it.
You still do it.
Yeah, we still do it. Yeah.
part of the last movement of the Sixth Symphony, the COE keeping calm under Harnoncourt's guidance despite the heat in the Stephanine's aisle. There's a tendency sometimes to forget that an orchestra is not just a beautifully assembled unit, but a collection of individuals, each of whom may find the performance a nerve-wracking experience. Thierry Fischer, these days one of the world's most distinguished conductors, was principal flute of COE in 1988, and he had invested a lot of his personal credit in persuading Nicholas Harnoncourt to begin working with the orchestra. When the moment eventually came, though, in Beethoven's Sixth Symphony, the Pastoral, Thierry's nerves got the better of him.
I was so nervous and happy at the same time. My heart was beating at 190 every bar. Like during the concert in the Pastoral Symphony, you have this moment before, after the La Scène au Chant, seen in the fields, before the last movement, which is so melodic. You have this connection played by the first flute. Pom 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 pom. And I just wanted so much the absolute best I could. It was very childish that what happened is that I played two or three wrong notes during this scale. It was like I was doing harakiri to myself. You know, I fought so much to have a Harnoncourt with COE, and I campaigned to all the colleagues to tell them that he was, you know, the future of musical history, etc. And I play pom 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 pom. Like, amazing. It had to happen, I guess. And luckily, COE colleagues are, you know, are real colleagues, and there was no sense of, you know, blame.
Harnoncourt forgave you.
Nah, he forgave me, and I developed a very close and, you know, friendly relationship with him.
Thierry Fischer reliving the agonies of his first performance with Harnoncourt and the COE. But, as he said, the relationship prospered, and by the time of the Schubert performances at the Striati Festival, the understanding between conductor and players was deep. You'll find them on 4 CDs from ICA Classics, with the catalogue number ICAC5160. Let's conclude with an excerpt from one of the most successful of the set. The Fifth Symphony is a work that many conductors find hard to balance. It comes right on the cusp of the join between the classical and romantic eras, a combination of depicting the dramatic forces of nature, the formal delight in well-constructed poetry, and the shifts between light and shade that Rossini's operas were making all the rage in the Vienna of 1816. Harnoncourt captures those wonderful contradictions perfectly as he guides the Fifth Symphony to a close. I'm Simon Mundy, and I look forward to bringing you more from the Chamber Orchestra of Europe very soon.
Thank you.